You are listening to a Hillbilly Horror Stories Patreon bonus preview. If you like what you're hearing, stick around to the end to find out how you can get more. Hey guys, welcome to episode 984 of Hillbilly Shorts.
Hello, everybody.
Tracy, you want to hear about a haunted cemetery?
Sure, why not? Is there any other kind?
Sure, there's plenty of cemeteries I'm sure that aren't haunted.
I don't believe that for a second.
This is an eerie history of Pennsylvania's Mount Moriah Cemetery. Different concepts may come to mind when we think of cemeteries. A place to rest for the dearly departed. Silly childhood games that involve holding your breath when you pass one during a road trip. And the setting of horror movies and spooky ghost stories. Not found among those various ideas is the following adjective. Abandoned. But that's the best way to describe Pennsylvania's Mount Moriah Cemetery. Located in southwest Philadelphia, Mount Moriah first opened in 1855. It originally covered 54 acres of rural farmland, but according to some of the estimates, eventually grew to over 400 acres.
That's a lot.
Given its sheer size, the cemetery was, and still is, the largest burial site in Pennsylvania. That's considering we went through, Laurel Hill,
mm-hmm.
And that thing was huge, and this is bigger.
That place was
means Laurel Hill's not even the biggest one in the city.
Yeah.
Let alone the state.
That's pretty amazing.
During its early years, Mount Moriah was considered a major landmark. Careful landscaping greeted visitors with scenic drives and rolling hills. Architect Stephen Decatur Button, who was responsible for many buildings across Philadelphia and New Jersey, designed the Roman-styled gatehouse and entrance. Its mausoleums and monuments followed the Gothic style. Compared to other rural cemeteries at the time, the cemetery was easily accessible. Families could visit by horse-drawn carriage. Nice. Caskets were brought to the burial sites via streetcar. And in addition to proximity, Mount Moriah maintained a more diverse clientele. It allowed the burials of African Americans, Jews, and Muslims, although not without challenge to the part of the white lot owners and cemetery workers. So they had a problem with it, but
right.
It is what it is. Mount Moriah catered to more than just residents of the surrounding area. In 1864, the federal government purchased two separate parcels of lands within the cemetery grounds. These sections would soon be called the Soldier's Lot and the Naval Plot. The reason stems from Philadelphia's role in military history. During the Civil War, Philadelphia served as a crucial hub for supplies and troops. As a result, wounded soldiers were treated in military hospitals found throughout the city. The Soldier's Lot interred soldiers who served in the Union Army. It also originally contained graves of Confederate soldiers, but the majority were transferred to Philadelphia's National Cemetery a couple of decades later. Along similar lines, the Naval Plot was open house to remains that were originally buried in Philadelphia's U.S. Naval Home. The Naval Home was established as a hospital and residential care facility for disabled and destitute sailors. After the Naval Plot was opened, over 300 sailors were moved from the Naval Home and reinterred in the new location. Today, the Naval Plot serves as the final resting place for over 2,400 U.S. Naval officers and seamen.
Wow.
Due to the Soldier's Lot and Naval Plot status as federal property, they are maintained by the Department of Veterans Affairs. Unfortunately, while military burial sites are maintained to this day, the same cannot be said for the surrounding parts of the cemetery. The last known member of the Mount Moriah Cemetery Association died in 2004. Since no known living owner remained, the cemetery would close its gates 7 years later. With no one to continue upkeep, the cemetery went into decline. In many ways, the impressive size of the cemetery grounds contributed to its current states. Ground maintenance for nearly 400 acres requires significant funds and manpower to keep the cemetery in presentable shape. But without either one in place, encroaching forest and overgrown grass soon swallowed headstones, mausoleums, and monuments.
Wow, what a shame.
Even the once grand entrance now lay in ruins. Given its status as an abandoned cemetery, Mount Moriah became associated with the less than reputable behavior. People used the grounds as a dumping site for trash and construction debris. Cemetery became a convenient location for criminal activity like drug dealing and prostitution. A getaway car was once even found and left there after a shooting. If no one was there to maintain the grounds, there was certainly no one there to patrol it. A sad ending for a cemetery that once housed the remains of Betsy Ross,
aww,
legendary first maker of the American flag. Even though Mount Moriah's glory days are long in the past, many people wish to restore it to greatness. A local nonprofit organization called the Friends of Mount Moriah dedicates their time to clearing weeds and creating pathways through the cemetery. To combat the persistent dumping of construction debris and litter, members even began placing signs around the grounds warning people that they'll be haunted by the interred if they persisted in their disrespectful behavior. While cemeteries are often linked to hauntings, the signs were meant more of tongue-in-cheek. In fact, very few ghost sightings are associated with Philadelphia's Mount Moriah Cemetery, although vague references to cleanup volunteer experiencing the paranormal can be found on the internet. But with only scant details to go by, it's up for debate whether these reports are true or merely an extension of the plot to drive away loiterers. In addition to the Friends of the Moriah, the seven-member Mount Moriah Cemetery Preservation Corporation formed in 2012 to create a redevelopment plan for the site. The efforts proved fruitful. A couple of years later, the Orphan Courts of Philadelphia granted the MMPC the power to manage the cemetery. So at least there's somebody managing it.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
In the years since, much progress has been made to revitalize Mount Moriah. In addition to the maintenance efforts spearheaded by the Friends of Mount Moriah, the two groups have established plans to build the entire cemetery and cement its historical importance. These include adding the cemetery to the National Register of Historic Places, stabilizing the crumbling gatehouse, and securing its new status as a nature sanctuary. Because while organizations believe in making the many mausoleums, monuments, and burial plots accessible to visitors once again, they also recognize the wilderness that's reclaimed it has become part of Mount Moriah's modern-day culture.
Aw, beautiful.
It says, while efforts to clean up the cemetery continue, gone are the days when volunteers worked hard to drive away criminals and opportunists. Over half the property is now safe to traverse, although visitors need to take care of what they choose to drive. Some areas within Mount Moriah remain accessible only to pedestrians, and many pedestrians do visit. Nature enthusiasts, joggers, and bird watchers visit the historic cemetery to take in the scenic views. And it may not be quite the same as Mount Moriah's glory days during the 19th century, but perhaps something new and equally spectacular can be rebuilt today.
Yeah, God bless them for doing that.
Yeah, I think it's so sad to just have a cemetery that just gets abandoned and people just don't pay attention to it anymore, and those people were just left behind.
No, I agree.
And we talked about that in one of the Dead Time stories we did on Eastern Cemetery up in Louisville. It just was abandoned, and it's just, I don't know, it's just sad to think that people are buried there and their families have all since gone and there's just nobody to remember them.
Yeah, it's a shame. But they're doing the right thing, and I'm glad that they are.
All right, guys, we will talk to you tomorrow. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Hey, guys, welcome to episode 985 of Hillbilly Shorts.
Hello, everyone.
Tracy, I'm kind of enjoying this whole graveyard cemetery type stuff. So.
You kind of digging it? Sorry.
This is on Portland's Lone Fir Cemetery.
Like fir as in fir?
F-I-R. Like, oh, fir trees.
Not fir, coats. Okay, gotcha.
Right. Like, what are you looking at me, fir?
You're trying to be like me.
That's a hillbilly thing. An eerie tombstone stands watch over one of the city's oldest cemeteries. Visitors to Portland's Lone Fir Cemetery may wonder at its name. The Lone Fir is now one of many in this lush and green space, home to nearly 25,000 souls at rest.
Wow, that's a lot of people.
It is. In 1854, Oregon pioneer James B. Stevens sold a large part of his land in Portland to Coburn Barrel, under the condition that Barrel maintain the gravesite of his father, who was buried there. Just a few months later, there was no question of what the land would be used for after Barrel's ship, Gazelle, exploded, killing 24 of the 60 people on board.
Oh my goodness, how horrible.
It gets worse.
Oh no.
Body parts were blown into all directions.
Well, I don't want to hear all that.
Into the sea and on the land. Identification wasn't easy, and early Portland settlers opened up their homes to store the bodies until they could be buried. Though Barrel had intended the land that he purchased from Stevens to be his own personal plot, he ended up interring several victims of the explosion there, including his friend Crawford M. Dobbins, calling the cemetery Mount Crawford after him. Years later, in 1866, Barrel tried to sell the land to the city, but they weren't interested. Thanks to a group of Portland families, the property was incorporated and 20 more acres of land were added. Mount Crawford was then rechristened Lone Fir. The name was suggested by Barrel's wife, Ariella, in honor of the, at one time, lone fir tree that was on the property.
Oh, wow.
In 1887, Stevens' wife, Elizabeth, died, and he had a special gravestone carved for her resting place. The sculpture depicts James and Elizabeth standing together holding hands in a manner that can only be described as visually arresting.
Oh, that sounds so beautiful.
The tombstone also has a rather creepy quote imprinted upon it. Here we lie by consent. After 57 years, 2 months, and 2 days sojourning through life, awaiting nature's immutable laws to return us back to the elements of the universe of which we were first composed.
I think that's beautiful.
I think it's very wordy.
Well, I mean, you got to get your point across. You can't skip no words.
That's something of mine. I just want to have like, here I am, or something like that. You found me. Something simple.
Shoot.
For 2 years, James visited his wife. It would also be his final resting place, so that he could imagine holding his wife's hand again. He died in 1889 and was buried beside her. Elsewhere in the cemetery, you'll encounter nearly 10,000 of its residents of Lone Fir buried without names, including 132 patients of an insane asylum run by the name Dr. Hawthorne in the 1800s. Dr. Hawthorne was also buried here. One section of the cemetery, known as Block 14, was used to house the unidentified remains of Chinese railroad workers who were later exhumed and moved in 1948. Some, however, were undoubtedly left behind. Cemetery records claim about 1,100 immigrants were buried here and only 265 bodies were moved. The eerie occupants of the Lone Fir Cemetery are not limited to the unnamed. Wander down the aisles and you may see the grave of Emma Morloughton. Emma, 33 years old at the time of her death, was a famous beauty and infamous sex worker in Portland. She was murdered brutally, hacked apart with a hatchet. In an attempt to find her killer, one of the eyes was removed by photographers, who at the time believed that the last image that a person saw would be preserved in their eyes. Unsurprisingly, this revolutionary thought did not result in her murderer being apprehended.
I mean, I could kind of see where what he was going for. That's kind of weird, though, to think that.
Yeah, well, it's not like it's got an SD card in it.
Well, no, I know that, but I mean, I know it's silly, but still, I mean.
Now, if it had been in like in that TV show, I think it's The Black Mirror.
Mm-hmm.
They had everything saved in your eyeballs, just like a memory card.
No kidding.
Go back and rewind it and fast forward like a DVR.
Oh my gosh.
Well, it wasn't until the guy's wife looked into his eye and found out, you know, the stuff he had done. Anyway, one of Dr. Hawthorne's patients, one whose name was preserved, is another fascinating case. Charity Lamb was well known for having killed her husband with an axe, supposedly because she was jealous of her own daughter. It seems now that Charity was like acting in self-defense against an abusive husband. But as the first woman convicted of murder in what was then Oregon Territory, her notoriety outlived her. Today, James and Elizabeth Stevens, the two pioneers of Portland and founders of Lone Fir, greet visitors as they trek through the 30-acre burial ground that lies across the river from downtown Portland. Tourists and curious locals have described the gravestone of the guardians of the Lone Fir as unsettling, creepy, weird, spooky, but also awesome, incredible, amazing, sweet, romantic, and beautiful. Though the cemetery is open daily to the public from 7 a.m. to sunset, Halloween is Lone Fir's busiest time of the year, when the cemetery hosts its popular Tour of the Untimely Departures, featuring the graveyard's most famous residents, including James and Elizabeth Stevens. Nearly 1,000 people queue up outside for a chance to meet them and to see their undying love carved in the stone for themselves each year.
Well, you know, cemeteries are sad.
No.
Nope. I was going shut up. I was going to say, but this cemetery seems extremely sad.
There's a lot of people that brutal deaths.
Well, you know, I'm sure
it's probably like that everywhere.
No. I'm talking about the poor people that were blown up. I mean, and that, and then, you know, people some of the graves got removed and some of them didn't. And I don't know. That's just really heartbreaking.
Yeah, there does seem to be a lot going on for this one particular cemetery.
Yeah, and you said the tuberculosis, is that what you said? Or the ones that had the disease? You said they buried a bunch of...
Well, they had the railroad workers,
right,
that died.
Oh, maybe that's what I was thinking about, maybe. But I just think the beginning of the story that you told with the people that were in there is very, very, very sad. Very, very heartbreaking. I mean, don't get me wrong, the people at the end, it's terrible. I mean, but it just seems like an extra sad cemetery to me.
That reminds me of the story that we were told in Cincinnati about the ship that exploded there.
That was terrible.
People were landing all over the farmer's
market.
Oh,
my God, no. I can't.
Well, thank you, guys. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
No more body parts, please.
Hey, guys. If you like what you just heard, we do 6 of those small bonus episodes every single week. We also do 2 full-length bonus episodes every month. We do a listener stories episode and then a story that's just like the ones you would typically hear on the regular feed. If you're interested in supporting us on Patreon, just go to patreon.com and look up Hillbilly Horror Stories, or go to hillbillyhorrorstories.com and there's a direct link right there. Thank you guys so much for what you do for us.